Dr. Cornel West is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell was talking, I think, about the separation of church and state, or the lack thereof. Isn't that right, Bill?
Well, and from the perspective, you just, you know, from Constantine forward, and that wasn't new. I mean,
Constantine, it sounded
Jared
to me.
Diamond says that, mm-hmm. that religion has consistently been the handmaiden of autocracy, of kleptocracy.
Mm-hmm. That is to say, those who steal. The business mm-hmm. about a Constantinian anything, it isn't just Christianity.
Right, Constantinian hip-hop, Constantinian...
That is to say, signing on to the man,
yeah,
isn't it?
And deferring to the imperial powers that be, rather than engaging in critique and resistance against him.
And this critique and resistance is what you call the prophetic voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what
absolutely.
Happens when you don't, when you succumb?
When you do succumb, you lose your democracy. Let's look, for example, at USA Today. I mean, we've got Constantinian Christians now who tend to want to impose their sense of morality on non-Christians, on Jewish brothers and sisters, atheistic brothers and sisters, agnostic brothers and sisters, Buddhist brothers and sisters, acting as if America is fundamentally America because it is a Christian state rather than a democracy that includes Christians. And we Christians do constitute a majority, which means we have to be even more self-critical, even more cautious and suspicious if we're fundamentally committed to equal treatment under the law.
We the people.
We the people. So you take gay brothers and lesbian sisters, right? Okay. Many Constantinian Christians would say it's abomination. Gay, lesbian, it's abomination. Yeah, I disagree, but the point is, whether they think it is or not, in a democracy, there's equality under the law. So you can talk about it being an abomination all you want within your own little context. That's your right to be wrong. But when it comes to equal treatment before the law and you impose your views on everyone, then if you begin to curtail rights and liberties, which mean in the end you begin to undermine some of the conditions for the possibility of democracy, which is persons being able to live a life in such a way that they don't engage in injurious harm to others but still choose that life.
This business of the law is very important, and I want you to take that a little more broadly, because everything you have just said applies as well in the world. And you're deeply concerned that this isn't just America's problem, and it isn't just sort of woolly-headed about, oh, well, everybody is affected in the world. This is very particular if we cannot live in, if we cannot preserve our own democracy, if we cannot look at a democratic process, particularly in what is now called the Middle East, since 1902. Thank you, I didn't know that.
Yeah, William Mahan coining the term himself, exemplary imperialist in his own actions and texts, but I mean, that's part of the genealogy of the category.
Well, and it is a reality with which the whole world has to deal and is
Absolutely.
Affected. But how is it that we've got to get our act straight on democracy to let the Middle East settle down?
Well, I mean, the thing is that so much hangs on the Middle East. I mean, we don't want to just act as if this region has a monopoly on problems, because we know in Africa and Latin America and Asia, we got tremendous problems, a variety of sorts. But so much hangs on the Middle East right now, in part because of Islamic gangsters attacking innocent persons and view the U.S. role in the Middle East as one of the reasons why they engage in such ugly activity. But also, secondly, I think it's also true that U.S. foreign aid is so invested. 50% of every dollar spent for foreign aid goes to the Middle East, Israel, Egypt, and Syria.
And it is important to say, because Americans don't seem to know this.
Jordan, not Syria.
I mean, Jordan. I'm sorry. That's right. I got Jordan in the book. You're
Jordan,
right. That's right. I'm glad you got that. I appreciate that.
The Syrians would be
surprised.
Absolutely. They'd probably take it, though, because we got some gangsters running Syria, but that's gone.
The reality is that America's foreign aid is the least of all developed nations, that we are stingy.
0.2%.
And 0.2% is nothing.
It's nothing.
And that this foreign aid typically is heavily military. So you're back to the problems of the militarism
Absolutely.
That infect the entire society, yes?
Absolutely.
Perhaps world.
Society and world.
Why militarism? Why do you pick that? We didn't finish with why we have to have democracy in the Middle East, which you say won't look a thing like American or Western democracy. How can that be?
Well, there'll be certain elective affinities, because I say there's a family of democracies. You have to have parhees. You got to have freedom of expression, religion, and so forth. You have to have an uncoerced civic life. You have to have rotation of elites. It's something I remind my Cuban comrades, though. The breakthroughs in literary, in education, healthcare, fine. But elites have to rotate. They can't get stuck at the top. It's a sign you don't have democracy. But so there's certain elective affinities of all these different kinds of democracies that can flower and flourish. But right now, we've got a whole movement in the Islamic world. You got 1 billion brothers and sisters out of 6 billion in the world who are of the Islamic faith. And therefore, we've got to think about what are the prophetic and Socratic and democratic possibilities within the Islamic world. In the same way, we've had to raise that question in relation to Christianity and in relation to Judaism.
And they are there.
And they are there. We've got a magnificent array of Islamic intellectuals from all around the world who are wrestling with these issues. Most Americans know very little about it. And, of course, the problem is right now these are visions and insights and analysis that are not translated on the ground because of the entrenched autocratic elites in Arab states, but that does not mean that those democratic visions cannot bring power and pressure to bear to transform those Arab states.
There are several other, but two really salients that stand out in your analysis and your presentation. That is the role of the press and its manifestations, and the role of the university. And in an interesting way, they came together with your experience leaving Harvard. And one of the tricks has always been, you know, if you want to have a sense of how the media works, be the subject of a news story.
That is true.
Because it gives you a sense of just how what is called news is handled. But if you can, that you make it a much more complex argument, but if you can compress it into that story, because it seems it's all there.
And a lot of people will be interested that you do tell your side of that story, but as he says, the high level of why these two, the media and the university, the problems within them, how that affects us all.
Absolutely, because the press and the university are ideally supposed to be the places where the parhesia takes place, where the frank speech, where the robust dialogue, where the uninhibited critical exchange is enacted. These are places where, if there's not freedom of expression, then where is one going to find it? You know? And that's part of the escalating authoritarianism that we're seeing. The USA Patriotic Act keeps certain individuals under surveillance that can easily keep track of which books are being checked out in various libraries and so on. We see it with the case of Brother Tariq Ramadan, who was supposed to teach at Notre Dame, and 2 days before he's to leave, the State Department cancels his visa, still gives no reason. This is a moderate voice trying to relate democracy to the Islamic world. He's written 21 books. Notre Dame is one of the great institutions of higher learning. Scott Appleby has been very courageous in this regard in terms of saying, look, we want a robust conversation about the Middle East, and the State Department won't let us have it. I mean, what's going on here? It sends chills down the spines of scholars. And let's be honest, I mean, most scholars prefer very, genteel context, almost of Edenic, Halcyon-like conditions, quiet and serene, which means that they can easily tilt toward a spinelessness when it comes to courageously taking a stand against the grain. And I think more and more we're going to see more courage on behalf of the scholars saying, look, we don't want government intervention. We want to be able to express our voices. We don't want to go on the streets. We want to stay in our seminars. But dang it, we want to be able to debate with people who are of high quality. We don't care where they come down ideologically, with the exception of them not being, you know, Hitlerites or Saddam Husseinites. And we don't have to worry about that because we don't have major scholars in those putting forward those kinds of views as of now.
And the same energy must be brought to the fact that we do not currently, I hadn't thought of it quite this way, we don't have a free press at the moment.
Yeah, it's a nice way. But, I mean, there's different levels of freedom. I mean, we've got this wonderful show, and under U.S. Patriotic Act 2, 3, or 4, they'd shut it down because we could be easily construed as being unpatriotic, too Socratic. We could be viewed as treasonous, which is too prophetic, or we could be construed as discouraging fellow citizens, too tragicomic. We need to be upbeat all the time. You got to be Peter Pan-like all the time. How come y'all always raising these questions to get people to think? Next thing you know, they're going to get tired. They're going, no, this is what the Paula Show, Bill Russell Show is all about. We're going to be Socratic, prophetic, wrestling with hope. Well, you see, under the law, 5 years from now, they may shut it down. Now, at that point, that's a more, you know, severe restriction on the free press than we have today. But I hear the point you're saying. On another level, you got the monopolies and oligopolies setting the parameters of much of what is available to persons, and you've got a subculture among the journalists in mass media where the reward structures are such where you go to the sensational story, the bottom line, that which will render your audience comfortable rather than challenge your audience. In that sense, it's not free in the broadest way, but we can imagine it being much, much, much less free, and we could be going down that path.
And we can also imagine it being much, much, much more free.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is Dr. Cornel West. We'll be back in a moment. Please do be with us when we return.